You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys to go and plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jay. Raining Jay. Millie.
Welcome back. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast, and we want to thank you for joining us. If you are joining us, I know some people aren't. Maybe they're not too happy about what the Celtics did in Brooklyn, and that is lose to the Brooklyn Nets 109-102. And, let's start with this. We're the Raining Jays. I am John Corrales, beat reporter for MassLive.com. Joined by Samuel Jamison Packard the Third.
Jam.
Also known as Ladies Love Cool Jam.
Jam. Sad Jam is difficult to pull off twice.
At least we have something to laugh about. Celtics Jam, this is the formula, isn't it? When these guys lose, it's tough first half. Third quarter, they let somebody go off. They fall asleep about halfway through the third quarter. Somebody goes nuts, and they give up a million points. And then somewhere in the fourth quarter, they decide, oh, shit, we should probably try to win this game. And then, as Jay has mentioned multiple times in this podcast, their clutch numbers are great. And because exactly what we saw tonight, because all of a sudden they figure out how to play basketball, they realize that they've got to do certain things to play well and to score. They do them, and they have great clutch numbers. But there we are. We lost. And it was a 27-point game that they cut down to 7 in the fourth quarter. But this is typical Celtics roller coaster for this season.
Well, we've long said that when they're down 26, they're the scariest team in the league. And I think they definitely proved that on this road trip. But I mean, it's completely nonsensical to have your four best games in a row followed by your three worst games of the season. But it was bad pretty much throughout the entire game. They shot 30% or close to 30% in the first half and managed to keep it close just by drawing free throws, which is insane because that's just not something that they do. But then that third quarter, it was just the Celtics do seem to have an innate ability to have a certain fringe level player go completely go off against them. It's Jamal Murray's Kemba. I guess Kemba Walker's better than fringe, but then tonight is D'Angelo Russell. But yes, D'Angelo Russell was hitting absurd three after absurd three and floaters and things like that, but the Celtics just, their offense in that stretch was anemic, and it was basically just like continued what they had been doing in the first half. But it was just like, it was a 2-point game. Then Terry missed a three. Russell made a three. Mook missed a three. Russell hit a three. Turnover. Mook missed a three. And there's just D'Angelo Russell scoring the entire time. Brad Stevens talked about after the game, that third quarter, them being a step slow defensively throughout the entire quarter. And it's just, I think Kyrie has it all wrong with like who he's blaming. It's not the young guys. It feels like the problem tonight was Al Horford, Gordon Hayward, and Terry Rozier. I guess you can count Terry Rozier as a young guy, but it's not a surprise that all three of those guys did not play a minute in the fourth quarter. They were all bad tonight. Just all of them bad. And it's just it's urgency. It's we kind of saw with the brief comeback, like kind of the defensive urgency and the intensity that they played with. And that's just at no point was there earlier in the game. And I think that falls on, I don't know if Al Horford's hurt. I don't know if Gordon Hayward's still hurt. I just don't know what's going on with Terry Rozier, but they didn't bring any of the effort that you wanted to see tonight, especially coming off two shitty losses. You'd expect them to like kind of bring it. And I don't know if they're coasting. I don't know if they're just saying like, well, we have the talent, we'll figure it out. But I don't think it's the young guys at this point. I think it's the older, the vets who are just not bringing the intensity every single night. because tonight Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum were the two lone bright spots for the Celtics.
Well, as I said in the last podcast with Jay after we were talking about Kyrie's comments, I felt like he was talking to Terry Rozier when he was talking about the young guys and playing certain minutes and specific minutes. Earlier in the season, I definitely thought he was talking to Tatum. I definitely thought he was talking to Jaylen Brown. This time around, I thought he was talking specifically to Terry Rozier. Now, he says he's not gonna do that anymore and call people out, but I definitely think that Rozier was the target of that last one because Terry Rozier has had a horrible road trip. I mean, absolutely horrible. And Jay King in the third quarter texted me, starter. Actually, it was the group text.
Yeah, it was the group text.
It was the group text. It was the starter, Terry Rozier, which I was surprised it took that long for him to get on him because Terry Rozier was so bad out of the gates that Brad Stevens called a timeout 29 seconds into the game. So,
I mean, I don't want to, like, not say that Terry Rozier was bad, but he was one of many players who was bad. He has had a bad road trip. He took some ill-advised shots. He's kind of sloppy on defense. It felt like every time the Nets had a wide open corner three, it was because Rozier got beat off the dribble and then it's just like over helping, pretty much committing like three to the ball, and the Nets had wide open players in the corner. But I think that, like, I'm one of the biggest Al defenders there is, but he had 2 points in Miami, and 10 points against Orlando. Hayward has been completely non-existent, in those two games as well. I mean, everyone wants to blame Rozier, but I think they're like more blame should be going around just because though, like, those guys that have not been performing in these three big, basically just real shitty performances. And I mean, you look at Hayward, he had 6 points against the Heat, minus 16. He had 8 points against the Magic. It's just guys you thought you could rely on are not showing up. And it's just like from the start, the Celtics didn't really have that intensity. The only reason they were in the game early, I thought, was because Jason Tatum was attacking and really trying to get to the line. And then just like the wheels fell off in that third quarter. But it's just there's no intensity until you're down 27. It's just not a great way to win basketball games.
No, it's not. So the fourth quarter, 0 minutes for Marcus Morris, 0 minutes for Al Horford, 0 for Terry Rozier, 4 minutes for Gordon Hayward. But he started the quarter and then didn't play when they were really making that big run. Yeah, I agree that those guys all need to perform better. Al Horford, I think some of this, I don't know if it's the knee.
He's got to be hurt. Like it's the only thing that makes sense is like this amount of just lack of aggression or lack of, like, he's never been the most guy who's just like going to call for the ball in the post, but it just seems like with Kyrie out, it makes sense to go to Al Horford. And that's just like, didn't seem like something they were doing. I think he has to be hurt because it's just he's not the same as he was, like, at least earlier in the season.
Well, it felt like they were doing it in the first quarter. It felt like in the first quarter they were running the offense through Al Horford. He had a couple of assists. He only hit one basket, but it seemed like they were running things through him. And the offense wasn't great. The offense was pretty much terrible for most of the night, but it felt like they were still running things through Horford. And that was okay. And then they kind of got away from that. And Al Horford, for him to be effective offensively, they're either going to have to work him in the post, which they did.
For like two possessions, though. That's, yeah, the frustrating, like, thing. It worked, and then they never went back to it.
And so now this begs the question with Al Horford. Is we know what makes him effective. Without them giving him the ball in the post, he's not going to go out and demand it. That's not who he is. He's going to try to make plays for other players. I don't think he's going to be that level of aggressive until the playoffs. I just think that he is conserving energy. I think he's just like last season, although he was playing better last season. I do think that some amount of Al Horford can be the knee. I think some of it is him just coasting, and he's just not going to kick it into this other gear until the end of the season, the stretch run in the playoffs. Gordon Hayward, it's so hard to say with Gordon Hayward because how much of it is the injury that the rehab, how much of that now is a loss of confidence? I just don't know. It's frustrating. I'm very hesitant to get on Gordon Hayward because of the recovery, because of all of that. and I know that it's going to be up and down. He definitely needs to do more for the Celtics to win. You can't go out there and score 3 points. They need him to be at least out there getting double digits, at least like that. If we got to be even with his recovery and all of that, like, he can still find a way. He's still good enough to go out there and find a way to score those points.
He needs to take, like, but just, it's not even just scoring. They need him to be aggressive. He took 6 shots tonight in 25 minutes. 4 of them were threes. I'm pretty sure the other 2 were just, like, long twos. Like, everything about this team, they need players going towards the basket. I mean, it's in stark contrast to the way the Nets play. It was just like, we're going to drive every single closeout and put our heads down, and eventually we're going to get to the line. It's just like, it's like the watching from a Celtics perspective is like, I didn't know you could do that. I didn't know you could just right. drive to the rim. And it's just, he seemed like he was not, like, I remember there was one possession in his fast break. He basically had an open lane to the rim and just kind of dribbled it out and really didn't do anything. There's no one really going hard to the rim except for Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. I mean, Terry Rozier, that's just not his game. That's never going to be his game. He is too small of a guy to really attack the rim. And we saw him when he did attack it, blocked severely, but I mean, they're going to need I would prefer Hayward to go out shooting rather than like just kind of be the passive guy who only has 6 shots in a game.
I can't argue that at all. I mean, that's he needs to do more. I wonder if having Jared Allen in out there patrolling the rim, just knowing how high he gets, like, even athletic guys like Robert Williams got blocked by Jared Allen in this game. Like, he's out there just blocking everybody. What do you have? 4 blocks in this game. I have to wonder if Hayward was like, you know what? I'm not confident enough in getting to the rim. I'm not confident enough in challenging this guy. So I'm just not going to do it. And I think that's part of the lack of aggression there. Not to justify it, but he's got to find a way to score. He's got to find a way to be aggressive. Then we saw late what happens when players are aggressive.
You know, it's a wild stat. The Nets had 17 turnovers and the Celtics only got 9 points off that.
That
shows to me lack of pushing the ball in transition or really attacking the rim. The Nets had got 18 points off of the Celtics 12 turnovers. So the Celtics won the turnover battle, but in terms of points off turnovers, they still managed to lose. It's just like, they got doubled up. How do you score only 9 points off 17 turnovers? That just shows you're not pushing the ball. The pace, like, the thing that was like so good about those 4 wins was the pace, the pushing the ball, the playing with high flying speed. The pace was generated by 1 intensity on defense, and then once the ball turned over, just really getting down the floor. And it feels like that pace, I don't know what being on the road has to do with it, but the pace and the sense of urgency has just not been there. And it's like the Celtics, you've talked about it, the things like they need to create more shots. They need to be getting up over 100 shots a game. The way they do that is pushing the pace. The way they do that is creating turnovers. And it hasn't been there for the past 3 games. And it's dumbfounding to have that happen after like these 4 35 assist performances.
Yeah. And another 21 assist performance in this. Was it 21? Yes. 21 assists in this one. So another game where they're below their season average, which is somewhere around 26. And I think they've only won once or twice doing that. I don't have the stat in front of me. I want to say they're like 2-7 now with less than 25 or less assists. And I'm not going to let Marcus Morris off the hook either. I'm not going to get too hard on him because he's been so great all season, but tonight, Iso Mook was back tonight. Iso Mook played tonight. This is the first real full Iso Mook game that we saw. And it just goes to show the contrast of how good he's been all season long, because he was not good. And there's a reason why he didn't play in the fourth quarter. Just like Al, just like Gordon Hayward for the most part, just like you said, Terry Rozier. The reasons that those guys didn't play or were limited. And whatever is happening with Al Horford, they got to fix it. If his knee is bothering him, then they've got to sit him down. Maybe they're waiting for Aaron Baines to come back.
I definitely think they're waiting for Aaron Baines to come back, because right now you can't you can't piece together a full game with Tyson, the Time Lord. They each have their moments.
Yeah.
But you can't get a full 48. So I really think they're waiting for Baines to kind of – I think once Baines come back, we'll see Horford take more time off, definitely.
I wouldn't be surprised about that at all, and which would be kind of scary because if that's what they're waiting for and if the knee is that big of a problem, then that's going to be something to worry about, I think, later on. All right, we'll just leave it there. We'll leave it there because there's going to be a lot more to talk about as the weeks go on. We're going to come back, take a short break. We'll focus on the positive because there was some positive in this game. We'll put a smile on your face or at least some silver lining, something. We'll try to do that after the break here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. So the game ended with the Celtics outscoring the Nets 36-19 in the fourth quarter. The Celtics went on a massive run. I had it at 28-8 to close the fourth quarter or get them back to, I think at that point it was within 10. So what we saw there was a level of aggression from Jason Tatum that we haven't seen all season long. You know, I should have checked this before I got on the podcast, but I think his 11 free throws this season, I mean, this game were his highest for the season.
I wouldn't be surprised if it was highest for his career. And I think this first time he ever got over 30 points.
It was career high 34-point night. And now the question is, why doesn't he do this all the time? Why? And there were still flaws. There were definitely flaws. But his second half, man, he came out and he was so aggressive. It was so great to see him attacking the basket and getting the free throws. Like, that's exactly how Jason Tatum should be playing all the time. Like, every game, attack, 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 and just keep going. It doesn't matter if you get blocked once or twice. It really doesn't matter. Go and just keep attacking and force the referees to make the call. And they did that. He and Jaylen Brown both did that in this game. Jaylen Brown, a 9 of 8, 22 points, just a couple of – well, he had that one loud dunk. Just if we're looking for positives, hopefully I think that these guys looking at that film tomorrow, Brad Stevens can say, this is how you play. Look at when you don't settle for long twos, when you attack the rim and you get to the free throw line, you put up 34 points, you get a career high. That's how you play basketball. Like, maybe that's the lesson that Jason Tatum needs, or maybe it's just because he isn't uncomfortable playing with Kyrie. I don't know. It's searching for answers here, but this should be a lesson for the both of them.
It's remarkable how much better your looks get when you just get touches in the paint. And if you're not going to have a big guy in there like Al Horford or like a someone you have trust, like passing from the elbows, you got to drive to the paint. And it's not just getting to the line, although Tatum did a good job of that, mostly with his like posting up and shooting, but just attacking in general. I thought Jaylen did a good job of that, but there's one play that stuck out was Tatum drives, kicks it to Wanamaker, who drives and kicks, and Jason Tatum repositioned himself in 3-point line. It's like in and out basketball, and Tatum knocks down the three. It's earlier in the game, one of Terry Rozier's like decent moments is like he caught a pass, drove in, got into the paint, just created a little bit of space for Jaylen Brown, passed it back out, and knocked down a three. It's just, like, I know they were stifled by the great 2-1-2 zone that really shouldn't be huge problems for the an NBA team, but they got to do something to get paint touches because it's when the zone was there or just generally in the first half, it's passing around the perimeter. And it's like the Nets, the thing that I thought the Nets did a great job tonight, it was never like pass, like they would never catch a pass on the perimeter and then just like wait or slowly wait for things to develop. It's pass and go. It's like the 0.5 basketball that Stevens is saying, like talking about. It's like they're catching on the run already. They're ready to go. They're ready to like kind of turn the offense around. And this, that wasn't there for the Celtics, at least until very late in the game. But there's just too much meandering. There's no purpose. And so I thought Jaylen Brown is like – when Jaylen Brown's playing at his best, he's like catching the ball on the run and ready to attack. He's still developing as a playmaker, but that's still like – that's the type of thing that leads to his absurd like left-handed dunks. And I thought – him and Tatum just getting into the paint just really opened up the offense. And shout out to Brad Wanamaker, played 26 minutes tonight because Smart was out, but 13 points off the bench. I thought he was just pretty solid. Four assists, knocked down some threes as well. I'd never thought I'd say today, but like maybe you start seeing Rozier's minutes go to Wanamaker, but I don't know how they handle that with Rozier being in a contract year. That's one surefire way to piss him off. But
sure,
right now Wanamaker is playing much better than Rozier.
Well, it'll piss him off, but you know what?
That's what he needs.
I think it's something you got to do, or at least for a game. At least you, because what up next is like Toronto, and what's that? Is that a TNT game or an
ESPN?
It's an ESPN game. So. Here's Terry Rozier looking to make his mark and blah, 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 all that crap. And it's a national TV game, and he doesn't play. A big old DNP coach's decision. And you play Brad Wanamaker those minutes. And then you tell Terry Rozier, you want another one? Or are you going to go out there and you're going to actually play basketball? Because you get two choices. You can play like you've been playing and screwing around and trying to do whatever it is that you're doing. Or you can play basketball and be part of this team and play well, and that will increase your worth in free agency. Like, these guys have, and I say young guys, this is a very Kyrie-type rant, they have this thing in their head, like they got to go out and play a certain way to get their money. But if they just go out and play the right way and play – The if he just does the stuff that Brad Stevens wants him to do, move the ball, like you said before, move the ball, replace, reposition yourself, get the ball back, you'll actually get more production out of that style of play than that selfish crap that keeps going on out there. And if you're going to go out there and not, I don't know, either not be ready or what, I don't know, then just sit down, and then you get zero production, and that's how it goes. I don't know. It's funny to me that he had two disgustingly bad games after a night off in Miami and a night off in New York, which is implying exactly what you think is I'm implying, that Terry Rozier's focus is not entirely on basketball right now. So sorry about the Terry Rozier rant. This was supposed to be the positive segment.
I know, but it bled over. The positive was that they came back from 27 down. It's once you bring up the 27 down, you just get pulled back into off. Oh, fuck, that was shitty. D'Angelo fucking Russell, like my god, he took a heat check in the like up 15.
Yeah,
and I thought it was going in.
The one thing I wanted to say, the one play that stood out to me on the aggressive driving, is a drive that Tatum missed, but he drove right. Everybody, he was a full court. Like he got a loose ball or something like that. He went from baseline to baseline. Drove. Three guys converged. He missed the layup, but Daniel Tice was there to tip it back in. And that is a great example of when you drive and are aggressive, the gravity of the paint touch, the closer you get to the rim with the ball, the more players are going to pay attention to you, because the one thing you have to do is prevent the ball from going in the rim. So the closer you get to the rim with the ball, everybody who's near the rim is going to say, oh no, we can't let this happen. And when you draw that many people in, that means all of your other teammates are now free, open to go do something. So
I feel like the Celtics get burned on that all the time, where it's like the Al Horford has to commit the help and he leaves his guy, and then it's just an easy offensive rebound. And so you're absolutely right. If you draw that much attention, you get those easy putbacks. So the closer you get to the rim, it's just much easier for everyone.
Like, that's not an assist for Tatum, but that should be. It's almost like an assist. Like, that could be a stat like the Celtics should monitor, and maybe they do for all I know, but an aggressive drive where you miss, and because you've drawn the defense, somebody's there for an easy putback. That's a positive thing for you. So I don't know. That to me is a very strong indicator of why the Celtics need to focus on those paint touches so much. We keep saying it. Somebody, I don't have it in front of me, but somebody tweeted at me saying, you don't even have to record a podcast tonight. Just piece together some old podcasts. You're saying the same thing.
Pretty much. Here's a new thing. Yabu was great in the fourth quarter. Really just like moving his feet defensively. Had two blocks, one steal. Team high, or he tied with Jaylen Brown for a plus 14. I thought it was fantastic Yabu minutes, although he only made 2 points. Other than throwing the ball off Jaylen Brown's back.
That was not
I thought
great.
Yabu was fantastic. And I'm a huge fan of Yabu's wagon, less so of his game. I'll be the first Yabu detractor, but I got to give him credit. I thought he was like really – there was a reason he played most of the fourth quarter. He was like a guy playing with energy, especially on the defensive end. It's just my God, the defensive effort. I don't know if the Nets like turned – like stopped trying as hard, but just getting into the ball and like just the aggressiveness on defense was so much different down that stretch than it was for the first half of that game and certainly was in the third quarter of that game.
I found the tweet just to give proper credit to Michaela at Title City Boston, who said, and I'll quote it, "Don't think you need to create a new podcast for this game. Just copy paste and re-upload a couple of segments from the other losses and you'll have it covered. This team just never learns." Okay. So to your point that Yabu definitely deserves a lot of the credit. He was on the floor for a lot of the positive things that went down, and he was where are you, Yabu? A plus 14. So he was on the floor for most of that. Props to Brad Wanamaker, who I didn't realize it was a 13 points, career high 13 points for him. So shout out to him. Okay, we are going to take another break. We're going to come back with your tweets, and a lot of you have a lot of things to say. It's not all great. Most of it's, yeah. We'll do that next here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. We ask you to tweet at us with the Rain and Jays hashtag during the game. If you want to talk about the basketball that's going on, if you have a joke, a goof, something funny, Rain and Junk is the hashtag. That is Jam's purview. So let's start with the Rain and Jays. And I want to start with Millie's because he was the first Rain. I want to start with Millie's because a couple of people have been kind of like on him to change the intro music because he says best squad in the East and people are like pissed that it says best squad in the East. And we're obviously not the best squad in the East. We recorded that before the season started. And Millie said, "My apologies to all Rain and Jays listeners for the best squad in the East bar. For now, take it as me speaking it into existence, but I'll change it if we don't start consistently winning." First of all, he follows it up by saying we can't get complacent. So I think that works because I still think they have the talent to be the best squad in the East, but they have indeed gotten complacent for too many. I think that line actually works. Secondly, don't bully Millie's into making a new song.
It's the shame on the Celtics though for so underperforming that they forced a rapper. A guy whose whole entire career is basically based on bragging about his own accomplishments, being like aspirational. You made him apologize for how shitty the Celtics have been playing. It just wasn't great. Millie's, you don't have to change it. You did throw in the can't get complacent. But man, if he said if he's going to change it if they're still playing this poorly at the All-Star break, so Millie's can submit to us any verses we have. We'll not give any comments or anything like that, but it's just not a good sign. Yeah. You know what? It's not great.
I just Millie's is a busy guy, man. He's out there trying to get to the next step in his career, which is already going great. Like, don't waste your time on new bars for this Celtics. Like, you got other shit to do, man. Don't worry about us and our song. The song is amazing anyway, so let's.
I just want to say, go follow Millie's on Instagram. I saw one of his freestyles he did with Static Selector today on his Instagram, and he made a great Herm Edwards playoffs reference just in the middle of his freestyle. You can usually catch all the cool shit he's doing on his Instagram, but that one really stuck out today. So go follow Millie's on Instagram.
I didn't see that. I got to go check that out. All right. At Mauricio Green BR, till now, Rozier losing money. Wanamaker getting a new chance in the NBA. We got lots of Rozier tweets. Rifesy, I guess Rozier deserved to stop and celebrate actually making a shot tonight. I think that came after the dunk, which was
awesome. It was a cool fucking dunk.
Real cool dunk, dunking on two people. I mean, that was a sick, sick dunk. It was really the only highlight, though. Let's see. Going back to, and then at, well, whatever, who is this, Commander Matt Decker? Tito Bear, keep an eye on his minutes. So those are your Tito things. At Nice D7, if the Celtics would make a couple of shots, Hayward would have already had like 6 assists on the night. He found the open man more than a couple of times. I will say that early on, the Celtics missed a lot of shots. I mean, they were a stretch. There were things weren't going. Sorry. So, yeah, I'm not worried about makes or misses because they'll go out and have a game where they hit like 60% of their shots and it's not a big deal. They might do it against Toronto. Like, we're talking about the 3 worst losses of their season, and they can go home and play Toronto and beat Toronto for all we know. And then we don't know what the hell to do with this team. So
they absolutely have like a chance to beat Toronto. It's like, oh, it's a team that we respect. Now let's give maximum effort the entire time.
Right, exactly.
Like, I expect a close game. The Toronto could very easily win, but like,
of course.
That's the crazy thing about the Celtics team, and probably the most frustrating thing about the Celtics team is that, like, oh, you're gonna have a chance against anyone, but you're also gonna have a chance to lose against anyone.
Right. Right. You just sit there and you'd say, all right, we're gonna take a few minutes off and let D'Angelo Russell go off for 15 points in a quarter, but then play 48 good minutes against the Raptors, and Kyrie's going to go off for 40, and who knows. If they go beat the Raptors, then I don't know. Shrug emoji. At Beer Jam, the Celtics-Nets game is ugly for Boston fan like me, but I still stand by my opinion that the C's road green versus Brooklyn home black on that court lighting is the most aesthetically beautiful combo to watch in the NBA. I like Brooklyn's court. I like Brooklyn's uniforms. They're simple. I'm a very minimalist kind of guy when it comes to uniforms. So, but
yeah, it's like got a cool Coogee version Biggie.
The Biggie stuff. Yeah.
I got no problems with the Brooklyn aesthetic. They changed the mosaic tiling on their baseline, which was upsetting
was
to some.
That was bad. I liked it.
It was cool, but other than that, no, I got no problems with Brooklyn. It's actually one of my favorite road arenas to go watch a game.
It's fun.
I think it's cool.
I enjoy it. I enjoy Brooklyn a lot. Maddie B 0814, are you finally ready to admit there is a major problem with this team? Love you guys, but I need some irrational hate takes. Is it supposed to be hot takes or hate takes?
I think hate takes. I think they want us to be angry and furious. And the fine folks should know, basically the last 25 minutes is the closest you'll find me getting to hate. I like to practice sports positivity. And by the time we get to the third segment, you know I'm ready to goof. I mean, I can't hold on to that rage. I got to do things tomorrow. Like, I can't just go about my day being upset.
You're just going to let it go, man. Let it go.
Control what you can control. None of you guys can control the Celtics.
Let's see here. Can you guys talk about the new move Tatum has been trying out since the Magic game? Little mid-range turnaround pull-up that's designed to draw contact. Mid-range turnaround pull-up.
He was drawing a lot of fouls, like, from the post, less trying to drive, like, basically just getting contact while doing turnaround jumpers in the first half. It was newish. Scal talked about it a couple times. I don't know how, like, sustainable it is if people just back off a little bit, but it worked. He seemed to really be embracing contact and looking for contact, especially there in that first half.
I will say that Danger Cart, Ryan Bernadone, had a great point about Tatum passing on opportunities to get fouled from behind the three-point line, because there was a chance on the right sideline where he up-faked. I forget the defender, but the defender kind of flew by him, and Tatum sort of ducked, dribbled in, and took a long two. But that is an opportunity for a lot of guys to – they'll just kind of jump kind of into that defender, and they'll get that call all the time because the defender is out of control, and all you got to do is kind of jump into him and take the foul, and that's three free throws. And the long two is the worst shot in basketball, and three free throws are your best opportunity to score in basketball. So that's a thing that Tatum – and I hope – I'm sure they'll go over it in film session, but I hope that becomes a focus for him, because that's a chance to get three easy points. And that not only that, it puts another foul on a guy. It adds another foul to the total. So that means you also potentially getting your teammates points when they get one foul closer to the penalty. Like, that's, it all adds up. Those things really tend to add up. So getting to the free throw line and drawing fouls isn't just about you scoring your own points. It's about putting them into the penalty early, and then some stupid little reach in gets Brad Wanamaker to the line later on. You know, so that stuff can add up. That one foul that you draw isn't just 2 points for you from the free throw line. It could be 4, 5, 6 points down the road when the team is in the penalty with 5 minutes to go in the quarter. So just, I hope they can get to that. I know Brad Stevens hasn't really – he said it in a scrum down in Miami that – or I forget where it was, but where he said, I'm not going to try to get these guys to be somebody they're not, which I understand, but you can still expand your game, and drawing those fouls is a big, big deal. So, okay, moving on. Big Chris O. Yabu played well in his role today and deserves mention in today's Rain and Jays pod. At least a Rain and Junk nomination for grabbing a huge rebound and throwing off Jalen's back. All of this stuff is exactly what we talked about.
This guy could be a producer. He knocked him, my exact talking points.
Yeah, and also, is it time to give Rozier minutes to Wanamaker? Like, it's exactly like those are the first two segments. Like, summed it up in a simple tweet. And we're here talking for 35 minutes. Moving on, at Balding Ballers. Fellas, I'm really at a loss. Haven't disliked the team this much since the Patino Bird Ain't Walking Through That Door days. People just don't like this team. And it's all because of expectations. It's all because of expectations. It's not that this team isn't necessarily likable. It's that people don't like the fact that they're not living up to the potential 60-win team. When we were sitting there before the season and going through wins and losses, we probably had this road trip at a couple of wins, at least two out of the three. So, yeah, I get it. Expectations are they're not living up to the expectations. But as I've said, you know, whose fault is that? Some of it's them, some of it's ours for setting the expectation that high and not taking certain things into account. So, at Justin GMU Hokey, what are your thoughts on any of defensive lapses in games being attributed to poor conditioning?
I don't know if it's conditioning. I think it's more injury, like Hayward's ankle or Horford's knee. But I don't know. I have no way of like being able to judge their conditioning out there.
Yeah, I don't think they're not in good shape, or there is in as good a shape as any NBA player for the most part, other than, like, it's hard for Yabu, it's hard for Wanamaker, or those guys who don't play NBA minutes. Those NBA minutes are hard, and no matter how much you run, you know, how good a shape you're in, those basketball minutes are just different. So, but to answer the question, I don't think it's poor conditioning. I don't think that's the case at all. At the AB Green, why do we give Brad such a free pass? He needs to be held more accountable. Doc Rivers would not be having this.
Yeah, well, Doc Rivers was coach of a team that won 16 games, so he might be having this.
Yeah, I don't think that's fair. Why does Brad get such a free pass?
I think it's a valid question up at this point. like, if the team's not playing with effort or urgency, like, that responsibility falls on the coach.
Yep.
At some point. Like, it's not entirely Brad's fault. Like, these guys are professionals, but and I think he did it. He showed, like, only played the guys down the stretch who were, like, giving that effort. And I think he's been pretty quick to, like, remove guys who he didn't think were playing well. He had the timeout with 29 seconds in. Like, I don't necessarily think the Celtics are, like, tuning him out, but as the leader of the team that is playing so poorly, he deserves some of the blame.
Okay, fair enough. At the same time, I will say that to answer the question, is why isn't he as criticized as other coaches might be? It's because he's got a pretty long track record of the team overachieving and exceeding expectations. This is the first time that they haven't to this point. We're still only halfway through the season, so it's not like this season is completely lost. They're still a fifth seed with plenty of time to get into the top three. So it's not all hopeless. This isn't it's not over yet. Although it feels over for a lot of people, I get it. But the one thing I'll say about Brad is he does have a history of taking the first half of the season and doing things that some people don't like, and then over the second half of the season, changing his approach. Like, the first half of the season is data gathering. Like, we talk about it all the time, that he's just compiling the numbers, figuring out the lineups, figuring out the matchups. Is there a place for this guy to work where he might not work here? Oh, this teammate, okay, this combination works. In the second half of the season, we've seen him in the past kind of adjust minutes, adjust matchups, adjust lineups. So before we go full on, I can't believe Brad's playing Terry Rozier this much or whatever other what you think it is, I'll say just let's see. Let's see what adjustments he makes as the team goes down the stretch, because it's entirely possible that some of the things that we're clamoring for, he'll make down the stretch. And if you think, well, I see it and he should just do it, it's just not that easy, because if you piss off Terry Rozier without the information to back it up, then you run the risk of actually losing the locker room. Like, some of the things that people say that a coach should do, they're basing it on what a coach should do, like, on a high school team. And this isn't high school. This isn't just bench a guy and he'll have to sit down and like it. This is the NBA, where these are grown men making millions of dollars, and they're young men as well, and it's very delicate situation with egos and money and contracts and all that stuff. So it's a very long season, and I would just say let's see. Fine, if you want to question Brad, I'm not saying you shouldn't. I'm just saying that there's still a long time left for these adjustments to be made.
I've long said season doesn't start till after the trade deadline. You know, I think, like, I've been saying that all year. So it's like, yeah, there's still a half a season left to be played, and a lot can happen then. So I'm not, like, pessimistic on the entire year. You still have to have faith that they're going to put it together. But yes, right now it's not been good, but season doesn't start till February.
So let's one last one here. At Title City Boston, I know Ainge isn't trying to make a panic trade, but do you think he should? To me, this just isn't working. Something's got to give. I don't know that he's going to make anything. I don't think he should make anything. Again, mostly because even if some of these guys aren't working, you can't risk blowing the Anthony Davis deal and potential Anthony Davis deal. So you want to keep all your assets. If he thinks that Terry Rozier is just done, not worth it, whatever, then maybe you say, we're not even going to bother waiting. We've got Wanamaker, and you get rid of Rozier at the trade deadline. Okay, maybe I can entertain that thought, but I just don't think anything like that's going to happen.
I agree that it's less likely, but I am coming more and more open to the Terry needs a change of scenery trade idea. Saw some stupid rumors out there because Dennis Smith is reportedly on the block to trade Terry Rozier for Dennis Smith. It's just like,
that doesn't make any sense in the world. Like, there's just Dennis Smith Jr. wouldn't fit at all in this. Like, he'd basically be a worse Terry Rozier with, like, who needs more of the ball in his hands. So that's dumb. They're not going to trade Terry Rozier for any guy who gets mentioned in a trade rumor, but I'm opening up more to the change of scenery, subtraction, or like addition by subtraction type of thing. If it continues, it's not going well.
Okay, so that's the Rain and Jays. Let's go on to the Rain and Junk, because we've been
going a long time. Yeah, I'll try to go quickly. We had a lot of them tonight. People were tweeting because they're so frustrated. This is from Stephen R. Stone. Everything was going so well until Abby left and Red's Army John started traveling with the theme. Don't tell me that's a coincidence. And then another tweet from WLO Hattie. Abby's value over replacement reporter, Vore's got to be through the roof right now. Can we survive and even get into playoffs with the rate at that rate with her gone? And so you guys have noticed a lot of patterns. First off, shouts to Abby Chin for having her second child. She will be missed on the sidelines. But I don't know. It could be a coincidence. It could not. I think we'll let the data play out. Maybe they'll lose every single game the rest of the year.
Don't blame me because I was home tonight. I'm back in Boston tonight. So that's – I wasn't there.
Okay. So it's probably the player's fault if you ask me.
At least – I mean, it's trending in that direction. I mean, we might need some more data, but it's trending in that direction.
All right. This is from Mike Dinan. What the hell happened to Kaizen? Answer me that, Coach Brad. Yes, the continuous improvement has not been there. It's been a roller coaster, so some step forward and then many steps back. So maybe they need to return to Kaizen and just doing the little things like, you know, trying. But we'll see if they can fix that against Toronto. This is from at Sean Ferran. Fuck yeah. How good was that Pacers win? Am I right? That's a classic classic goof. Goldberg rules at rules. Goldberg never max a white guy. I just thought that was funny. And then I was trying to think, who's the last white guy on a max contract that you say would be successful?
I don't know, and I don't want to even.
All right. Moving on to Kim Morian. Oh, no, you already mentioned that one. A lot of Terry Rozier stuff. I'm just going to move on to my junk drawer. We got to wrap it up. Joe Harris looks like a lumberjack. Karuks is a magician. New Shoes by I Can't Wait is a great song, and they play that instrumental. I feel like only in Brooklyn. It's fantastic. Spencer Dinwiddie hit an absurd three at the end of the shot clock. That was very infuriating. We got a Time Lord block on a lob attempt. It wasn't even a real shot, so that was pretty cool. At one point, Karuks was bloody, which led me to the conclusion that he does blood magic. He is a magician. And I'm terrified of him. He, at the end of the third quarter, they took that terrible shot. He just, like, knew it was going to be an air ball and fit, like, basically used it as an alley-oop. Karuks is going to take over, and I'm just being the first one to warn you guys. We already talked about the Terry dunk. Here's the big thing I discovered today. I forget the exact Twitter user, but someone posited the theory that Uncle Drew is just the black Mike Gorman. And I've seen the photo documentation. They have very similar beards. It was kind of spooky. And then finally, I'm just going to teach the people some things. Tomorrow or today while you're listening to it, January 15th, is the 100-year anniversary of the great molasses flood of Boston of 1919. And if you guys want to deep dive through a Wikipedia rabbit hole, read about that crazy molasses flood that killed 21 people and spread 35 feet of molasses tall all over the north end of Boston. Wild stuff. 100th anniversary tomorrow or today.
Yeah, that's I remember that. That was a wild day.
Wild times. There was molasses everywhere.
Yeah, surfing those molasses waves down the north end. All right, is that the junk drawer?
I mean, if we're ending on molasses talk, you better believe that's a junk drawer.
Yeah, that's my bad. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Hope you enjoyed the show. Thanks to all the new listeners. Thanks to all of the longtime listeners. Thanks to all of the listener gods out there. We appreciate you in a big way, in a very meaningful way. And I'm not bullshitting you. We love you. Thank you for listening. Appreciate you. Subscribe. Give us that 5-star rating. Share the podcast. Tell everybody. Listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Yeah, Corrales packing.
Reed and Jay King. Locked on Celtics.